experts are back. This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
It's 35 after the hour. Welcome back to the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. We're here this morning with Jamie McAloon-Lampman, the director of the Ingham County Animal Control. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning, Lee.
Jamie, in the coverage of the Australian Shepherd story, obviously you saw that you were part of the trial, and they did cover it in the newspaper a little bit. Can you just tell us, with all of the Aussies that ended up coming into your facility, how did that impact your facility, and what were the costs to you in terms of dollars, in terms of the staffing in order to handle it? How did it impact you?
Well, a seizure of that size is very, very difficult to do, and it's rarely done in any shelters anywhere because of the volume of the animals and the care that it entails. We're fortunate to have a large kind of a first responder team of volunteers that comes in and helps us do processing on large cases such as this, because we've done others as well. And when they first came in, we were able to get it together quickly. It was very organized. We had animals being processed, vaccinated, screened. Many of them had to have initial immediate attention for open wounds and things like that, and grooming, that sort of thing. The costs are in the thousands. Of course, we'd look for restitution in that. We were able to get a small grant to assist us with some of the emergency medical needs right up front. That was very helpful. And, of course, the community was very supportive. They made some donations towards it, so that did help somewhat. But it was significant. It's probably over $50,000.
Beyond that, there was actually a lot of the volunteer activities going on in the community as well around this whole thing, because I know they can't all be housed in there when you have a limited amount of facility capability and you still have to function on a day-to-day basis. How did facilities outside of your facility?
Well, we were fortunate that the Animal Placement Bureau came forth and took over 20 of those animals from us. And they provided a lot of the medical care as well at their own expense, which was significant funding for them to have to pay for all that. So they were very helpful. We had a lot of volunteers that took them into their foster homes, that sort of thing. So not only did they help relieve us of the space, but they also helped to do some of the rehabilitation for these animals, which they could not have gotten in a shelter because there was just too many of them. They really needed to have somebody who could work with each one of them. So that was very helpful. But our day-to-day business was impacted. I mean, our shelter was just, there was lines out the door right after the story broke on the news of people wanting to help, from fostering to donating the toys and the food and all the supplies that were needed. So it was a great effort by the community to come forth and help us. It really was, and rescue groups as well.
So there's probably a reoccurrence of these types of things that happen throughout communities throughout Michigan and even the United States. Is there a file you go to that says, when major crises come, here you go, here's your seven steps, or how difficult is this process?
We actually, we have a disaster plan, an animal's disaster plan. We actually initiated our disaster plan. Like if there was a fire, if there was a flooding or something, we initiated our disaster plan. We went right to our volunteer list of people that could come in and do some of the physical assessments, and they all have their own skills. So from foster homes to transporters to groomers, to bathers, to people who can actually, clip toenails and do vaccinations. So we went to our disaster list and started that. And it was great. It was a very smooth operation. It really was. But as any large-scale impoundment will, it's devastating to an organization because of what it drains your staff. It drains your volunteers. And it certainly does impact you in a negative way.
I could see that when I was out there. I stopped out there just a day or so ago. I'm amazed at how vibrant that community is and how diverse both volunteer and paid organization it is. It takes all kinds of it's amazing. It's like this three-dimensional wheel that's hard to
put it.
Yeah. And I was thinking, in the midst of all of this, your service to the community has to be interrupted because you've got one person that wants to bring a single dog in for adoption, to relinquish, mm-hmm. and then next door you have somebody that's keeping a dog for you, a foster mm-hmm. person, You know, and then all of a sudden, all the staff, I mean, how many staff members do you have that really can function on all this?
We have 17 staff members, but that includes the kennel staff, includes the clerks. We have our own dispatchers and includes the officers. I'll tell you what, every one of them does every bit of the job almost. You know, and as you said, we have three clerk windows up front. We often have lines out the door, and it could be somebody who's, you know, relinquishing a pet they've had for 10 years. They've lost their job living in their car. And then right next door, you've got a dogfighter coming in and arguing and threatening to, you know, kill us if we don't give his dog back. And then in the next window, you've got somebody who just wants some help with some food. They just need some food to get them through the next month. Or they're asking for some spay-neuter assistance, something so they can still keep their pet. They may have lost everything else, but by God, they're going to do whatever it takes to get the help to keep that pet. And so you the dynamics at the front window there, we need compassion fatigue almost on a daily basis because it's exhausting. You have children weeping as the dog's being left behind because they can no longer keep it. You've got people that are coming in that are just crying with they're ecstatic because we just found their dogs. We just did a recent case where we went on a welfare call where the house was abandoned, and you know, with the assistance of the Lansing Police Department, who are great, by the way, in helping us with these animals, got us in the house, and we got the dogs out. Dogs turned out to belong to somebody who had been looking for them for 2 months, and they found them because of the microchip in them. And they had abandoned these dogs in the house and left, and these dogs belonged to a family had been searching. I mean, they had color posters all over the place. We still had one hanging on our wall to shelter.
Wow.
And they were ecstatic. I mean, there's so many highs and lows. It's an emotional roller coaster working there. It really is. And we call, you know, we have days where we call it a million-dollar moment, and that, when they got their two dogs, was a million-dollar moment. You know? It's extremely rewarding. It's extremely devastating on days. You know, we have dogs that come in that are just a rack of bone. People bring them in, say they just found them, and you know, through more interrogation, we find out it actually was their dog. And then, as we inspected their house for other dogs, we find other ones locked in their house in the same condition. I mean, and you just say, why? Why did you starve this dog to death?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, it's not an issue of income. It's in these cases, it's just an issue of ignorance and laziness.
Yeah, and we can always be working on the ignorance part.
Oh,
I think
God.
In this show, that's one thing that drives me to this microphone is that ignorance is there, mm-hmm. but ignorance is one of those things that it's a dark corner in the room, and we just need some light. On mm-hmm. the other hand, laziness is another situation,
yeah.
and so unfortunate that we have to tackle these particular problems. But wow, you know, you're really right on the front lines, and there I can definitely see some fatigue. I mean, I try to do a job in my situation, and unless there's like a major storm going through and everybody's losing their fish tanks, I don't have to contend with that type of, you know, dichotomy of
yeah.
issues and problems and stress. But what a service to the community you are. What
yeah.
that the whole organization that you have in there. You know, from the orange and white suits that go walking
yeah.
around the aisleways, you know, you would be that seemed like that in and of itself. The participation you have with the jail system must be invaluable because you are in very difficult times right now.
It is.
We are in difficult
yeah.
times. So, you know, maybe you could comment on that, on how helpful everybody that is part of that cog in the wheel.
Well, we rely heavily, of course, of our staffing, but we have 200 animals minimum in that building on any given day, 200
Amazing.
Animals. And then,
Amazing.
You know, in the summertime, the flow of animals coming in, starting in April, I mean, this is a blessing right now, this time of year, that we can have a sigh of relief. We've got plenty of room. No animal is dying because we don't have any space. You know, if we're putting animals to sleep, it's because they're just too far beyond rehabilitation. And believe me, we go through a lot to rehabilitate animals and mm-hmm. treat them medically. There's plenty of space right now. But in the summertime, we have animals flowing in that front door, and we have dogs flowing in the back door, dogs and cats, because the officers are bringing them in on their trucks, and then the public are bringing them in the front door. But it's like a triage center with animals coming in. They're injured. They're ill. Many of these animals have never had a vaccination in their life, so their immune system is not where it should be, especially to endure living in a shelter with 200 animals.
Mm-hmm.